Hello, welcome to the Audio Drama Production Podcast. My name's Robert, I'm here with my colleague Matthew, and we're here to talk to you all things making of audio drama.
Yeah, and speaking of audio and audio production, we're talking into two brand new mics, nearly said three brand new mics there, like we'd enlisted a third co-host, but the AKG C214, endorsed by Mr. Matthew Boudreau himself. So if they're good enough for Mr. Boudreau of Oral Stage Studios, they're good enough for us. So wow. These aren't the sort of mics we're commonly going to be recording the podcast with, but we're in the old studio today, so we decided to live it up, didn't we?
Yeah, why not? Open the throttle a little bit, take it to 90, see how they fare, and they sound really good, don't they?
Yeah, I really like them.
And if you want to buy them, you can do through the website, presumably, through the affiliate link. And if there isn't one, I'm sure we'll make one.
Yeah, they sell them on Amazon. Yeah, today, Robert, I read a book recently. You ever read a book before?
I've started one.
So this book was called, and still is called, incidentally, The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg. I think that's how you say his surname. It's not really important. But this was a brilliant book all about, funnily enough, The Power of Habit. And it was a deep dive into like the way we work as people and our habits and just how powerful they are. A lot more powerful than our conscious mind. And this book had a lot of different stories, anecdotes and things like that. And one of the stories later on in the book really caught my attention, specifically in relation to sort of making audio drama. It was all about way back in the day before, I think 2003, some clever person came up with this algorithmic program in which they were able to put songs in it, like run songs, pop songs or whatever through it. And based on what people traditionally like in a song, this could give you like a percentage of how popular that this song might be. So if somebody was coming out with a new song, they could run it through this thing and it might say, well, there's a 74% chance that this is going to be a hit. So basically it was just like, it was going on what people traditionally liked in a song and not necessarily what people know that they like in a song, but again, it's all about the sort of subconscious and the habits and what people have come to expect in their music. So remember the band Outkast?
Mm-hmm.
So they came out with the song Hey Ya, which nowadays you can't really turn a radio station on without hearing that particular song, can you?
No, that's right. It's certainly popular amongst the populace, you might say.
But back then, when that song came out, they ran it through this the algorithmic thing. It was called Hit Song Science. So Hey Ya came out and the record label got their hands on it, ran it through this Hit Song Science, and it was almost 100% guaranteed to be a hit. And they obviously got really excited about it because they were going to make loads of money. And when they started playing it on various radio stations, their data told them that people were actually switching off when this song came on. And the reason really was that this song was too different to the other songs at that time that were being played a lot. What people had come to expect, again, whether they were consciously liking a song or not. So people were turning it off because this was just far too different. And bands that were keeping people tuned in, the book says it was stuff like Maroon 5, Celine Dion, really sort of insipid stuff. And apparently the reason for this is just that people's brains get so used to these type of songs, they learn the lyrics, and there's this part of our brain that's really satisfied with just having this mundane song that we know all the words to, and sometimes if we're on our own we'll maybe start singing along and stuff like that.
Mustang Sally.
Exactly, yeah. So Hey Ya was just far too different, and what they had actually had to do, and they provided all the data in the book, was like playlists of like, we'll play Maroon 5, we'll play Hey Ya, and then at like Maroon 5 again or Celine Dion again. I can't remember a lot of bands for back in 2003, but the sort of things that your local commercial radio station would just hit you with, like every other song. So that was almost like a Trojan horse, keep people listening and bring in this really new sounding material, and then before you know it, people got into the habit of listening to that song as well, and it became absolutely massive.
Well, I know from my days in radio, the few that they were, that I know a lot of radio stations, they always come out of the top of the hour, i.e. speech content, with a song that everyone knows. They don't play new stuff. It's got to be a big classic hit. They have to make sure they come up with something that everyone knows. And also from the covers band I'm in, we play the newer stuff quite often, you know, something that'd be a bit more experimental or a bit more niche. We'll play that in the first half, but the second half, particularly towards the end when everyone's had a few drinks, it's got to be Brown Eyed Girl, it's got to be Maggie May, not quite Mustang Sally, but maybe Bon Jovi and all that. It's got to be songs that everyone knows and loves, and no matter how cheesy and corny you think they are, it's got to be those songs. So that says a lot about the human condition, doesn't it?
So the listener must be thinking, like, how does this relate to audio drama? And it got me thinking about the medium, and not just audio drama, because I like to think we deal with, like, fiction podcasting in general. So what's popular right now at time of recording in the fiction podcast world? You've got things like The Black Tapes, Night Vale, Alice Isn't Dead, Tannis, The Message. So there's a bit of a reoccurring theme throughout this, isn't there? You're talking about stuff that's pretty heavy narrative. I would say there's not a lot of foley going on in these shows. A lot of them are maybe like fake radio shows, fake documentaries. These are really big at the moment. These are winning over new listeners because they're well downloaded. People are recommending them. And when folks find these shows, they get into the habit of listening to them every morning on their commute. And when they finish or catch up with these shows, they inevitably go online to maybe the Reddit groups or forums or things like that, Facebook communities, and they ask specifically for content that is like the stuff that they have been won over to the medium by listening to, don't they?
Yeah, and just briefly I'll diverge to comedy, because a lot of the most popular comedy comedians or comedy shows or whatever, they have catchphrases coming out of their arses, you know? And it's because people, they're like, oh yes, I know that catchphrase, I knew he was going to say that, and my brain has rewarded me for feeling so clever. And yeah, that's why. It's because we like what's familiar, or we like to feel that we're involved, that we're in control of the situation to some extent. And I think maybe there's a bit of supply and demand there that are feeding off each other. Like, we come to expect more shows like The Black Tapes and Tannis and Limetown, because that's what's coming out. But they're bringing it out because they think that's what we want to hear, because we're listening to it so much. And how soon until the next superhero film comes out, you know? We've come to expect superhero films every week now.
And I suppose, like, not to digress too much, but listening to audio drama, listening to podcasts in itself is a habit. It's not the sort of thing, you never really hear someone, and I dare say that there will be exceptions out there, but you ever hear of someone who says, I used to listen to podcasts, but I stopped, or I used to listen to audio drama and I stopped. Like, again, that those people will exist, but most people get really hooked, especially on audio drama, and they're always trying to find the sort of content that got them into the medium, got them really excited about it, you know, the first show that they ever binge listened to.
Yeah, and I have to say, when I first came to podcasting, when I first heard it, it would have been We're Alive, and then 8x0, and I started to look for more stuff, the first thing I did, I must admit, was look for stuff I was familiar with. And dare I say it, that involved Star Wars, Star Trek, Batman, anything else that sprung to mind, whatever computer game I was playing at the time. That's the sort of thing I was looking for, because I didn't quite know how to look for new content that was similar to We're Alive or 8x0. So we go with what we know half the time. So if you've got something that's very different and you've got a good way of getting it out there, then I'd certainly be glad to hear it.
So not only is a listener influenced by the shows that they find initially and they really enjoy, but creators themselves and listeners who go on to become creators, it's only natural that what you make is going to be influenced by what you listen to. It's a bit like music, Robert. You've been in a few bands in your time. The songs, the bands that you like, the songs you like, when you join a band, that's the songs you want to play, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And there is a little bit of a compromise between what I personally like and what the band decides it probably should play because most people out there will like it. In fact, I've gotten to like certain songs and indeed certain bands because I've been pushed into learning certain songs and thinking, actually, this is really good. And I wouldn't have gone out of my way to listen to them before. So again, it's that that push that's needed sometimes for someone to learn to like something they haven't liked before.
So with the listener trends, like we've talked about the type of show that's popular just now, if you're just starting out and you also make this type of show, there's a good chance that it's going to get really popular very quickly. And I suppose on the surface, that's a really good thing. Like there's a great opportunity to get loads of downloads and be really well known after maybe just putting out like 4, 5, 6 episodes. I would say, and not that I would ever like discourage someone from trying to get their show out to as wide an amount of people as possible, but I suppose there is a slight risk of doing too much too soon. Like say you were featured on iTunes or something like that and you've only just started out. The danger of getting too much publicity is that you do get a lot of listens, you'll get a lot of good reviews, you also open yourself up to a few bad reviews as well. So it's not something that you should deliberately go out your way not to be, you know, featured and get in front of a lot of people, but it's being aware that you'll face some criticism and I suppose just being prepared for it and trying to sort of harness a thick skin around your work, because it's always horrible to hear that someone's hated what you've done, isn't it?
Yeah, we've talked about this before. No matter what you do, no matter what you create and put out there, there'll be somebody out there for whom it just wasn't what they wanted and they'll take it out on you. They'll consider it an unfair review. It probably will be. There's so many of them out there. You just have to accept that not everything you make is for everyone. And there you go. And that probably means you've made something decent.
Yeah, I do. I must admit, I make a habit of like the shows that I really like. I'll often go on and just look at their bad reviews. I don't know why I do it. It's like slowing down when you drive past a car crash. And I'll not name the particular show because I don't think it's very fair. It's a show that I really like. And I noticed, I think they'd maybe been featured on iTunes, had a couple of one-star reviews, totally unjust, just like ridiculous. And really, there should be a way to at least challenge these reviews because someone could just write anything and it's there. But again, like any show that's had any sort of success is going to have a lot of 5-star and it's going to have a few 1-stars and then it's going to have something in between. It's when you see the show that's, you know, it's got 10 5-star reviews and they all happened on the one day because the person obviously asked for reviews. That's when you know that you can't really look too much into reviews.
Aye,
when you're making your mind up.
Look at YouTube. You maybe see a video of a 7-year-old girl who lost her sight for 4 years and suddenly she's regained her sight and she can see her mummy and daddy for the first time in years. And it's nothing but happiness. And there'll be 17 people who have given it a thumbs down. You know, like, what did you not get from this? You know, like why is this a bad video? But yeah, people are just like that. And you have to take that.
Another thing with making, like if you make a show that's heavily influenced by the stuff you like and the stuff you like is really popular just now, you'll get maybe like bad reviews because you've copied something or somebody's going to say you've copied it. And again, there's a difference between being heavily influenced and copying something. And I think as long as you are enjoying what you're doing, you're passionate about it, you've put your own spin on it, like there's no harm in repeating what's been done before because we don't always have to reinvent the wheel every time we tell a story or create something.
Yeah, that's right. I've heard before that don't worry too much about where your content has come from because everything's been done. Everything. Get over that very quickly. Don't worry about where it's come from. Worry about where you're taking it next. If you're not taking it anywhere new, if it's just the same old thing, then yes, you're copying it. If you're putting your own slant on it, your own view, your own perspective, your own spin, then nobody can say a thing.
What about if we look at the other side of the coin? So we've talked about the style of show that's really popular just now. What if you're creating something that's really different to the sort of shows that are popular at the moment? The danger if you're going down that route, is that you might not be getting a lot of downloads, not getting a lot of traction, no interaction. It feels like you're maybe creating stuff and putting it out there and nobody's listening. So that could be a bit disheartening for someone when they're putting work out there and they feel like they're not making any progress with it, can it?
Yeah, it's very easy to think that, well, people, they're not used to what you've put out, so they can't appreciate it. Maybe they've got nothing to compare it to. You know, it's easier to compare a fine wine or a whiskey or something when you've got four others of varying quality. But imagine if you'd never tried wine or whiskey before, Matthew, and then somebody say, here, try this, it's brilliant. And you're like, wow, that's the worst experience ever, and because you've got nothing to compare it to.
Yeah, like when Michael J. Fox gets up on the stage on Back to the Future.
And tries a whiskey.
But, you know, I remember, like, we spoke about David Bowie a bit in the podcast a few months ago when he died. And a lot of, you know, when David Bowie died, everyone came out the woodwork and he was brilliant and, you know, he never put a foot wrong ever. And I got a magazine in the house and it had all, like, the reviews of his albums from, like, the NME and things like that, you know, when his albums came out.
Mm-hmm.
And there were so many journalists sniping for him when he put out albums like Low, which is, you know, one of my all-time favourite albums.
Yeah.
One of the headlines, I think it was a one-star review, and it was Bowie hits an all-time low. And it was basically because people expected him to be doing Ziggy Stardust forever.
Yeah.
And this album wasn't really like anything else that was out there at the time either. So Bowie did this and it was too different. And journalists hated him. And I dare say he lost a lot of fans as well. But he knew that he was creating the sort of stuff that he wanted to do. As long as he was happy about it, he was passionate about it. You look at that stuff now, you know, no one will say a bad word about it. But when he did that back then, he took a huge risk for his own sort of credibility, his reputation, and people slated him for it. So you might be making something at the moment that really isn't popular at all. But if you've got this vision in your head and you're enjoying writing it, you're enjoying making it, keep going and don't get disheartened that you're maybe seeing these other shows doing really, really well, because over time things change. And as we've said before, download figures aren't the be all and end all of doing this stuff.
That's right. And that happened to Bowie a lot, actually. He would bring out something very new to the last thing, and then he would maybe do a concert and play a lot of the new stuff on the tour. And newspapers and journalists would report that fans were unhappy because they'd come to hear him sing Ziggy Stardust and all the rest of it. And he insisted on playing his new stuff. What an egotistical bam he is. Like, well, he's a musician. He's making new stuff and he's putting it out there. This is how it becomes good in the first place. You know, you make it and you put it out there. And he didn't care. He just did what he wanted. And you should do that too. And you won't be alone, because there's a lot of people whose stuff was not revered particularly highly at the time because people didn't get it, that has gone on to become as acclaimed as it possibly could be. A great example of that is the film 2001 A Space Odyssey. Are you familiar with that one, Matthew?
Haven't seen it, but I've heard of it.
It is an absolute classic. The fact that it was made back in, I think, 1968 belies the accuracy and the detail of the fact that it's set in space. You know, it was all very realistic. It's a really weird film and it's brilliant. And I could watch it time and time again. And Kubrick knew that. Audiences came and saw it and thought, what the hell is this? I mean, what happened? Ambiguous ending. Not for me, thank you. I want the hero to save the woman, you know. And Kubrick does what he likes. You could see that in all his films. And apparently Woody Allen went to see 2001 when it came out. And Woody Allen, very highly acclaimed director, he didn't think much of it. And he went to see it again and thought, all right, I get it now, you know. So don't be put off by thinking that not everyone's going to fall in love with it, because, as I heard once, popularity is the trademark of mediocrity.
Yeah, wise words indeed. Just remember why you're in this, why you're doing it, what your main motivation is, and just keep doing what you're doing. Keep putting stuff out there and, you know, whatever size of fan base you build, as long as you're being true to yourself and your stories, then you're doing absolutely fine. And with that, I suppose we could move on to talking about one of our own stories, because we've got a bit of Valenheim news, don't we?
We do, yes.
this will sound really shocking, maybe, but Valenhai is actually cancelled in its current form. If you've been listening to the podcast for a while now, we'd been talking about working away on a series called Valenhai. It was a dark fantasy series. So we'd been working with Steve in Boston to create this universe and these stories. And certain things have happened. It's all on very good terms, but we've decided that in its current form, it maybe wasn't going to work. And we've decided to kind of pull the plug on it. But it's still going to exist in some form, isn't it? Because there are a lot of stories and characters that you and Steve created that you'd like to maybe do a bit more with.
Yeah, well, the whole thing started off, it was going to be an anthology with lots of different authors and maybe different producers. We realised that that just was not feasible. But by that point, we already had a couple of different stories that we wanted to keep. So we tried to weave them together into this big, long story, Game of Thrones style. And it basically just, it grew arms and legs, and it was just a monster that we could not begin to hope to produce. It would have taken far too many actors, far too many man hours. So what we've done is we've put it on hold, kind of. Steve Schneider and I are still working on it in some form. What we're looking to do is actually create a few mini-series around some of the different characters we've already written about and established. So we'll group characters A, B, and C together, and we'll do a six-parter maybe. And then other characters, X and Y, we'll put them together in one little adventure, and we'll make a four-parter maybe. So that's what we're hoping to do. Consider it an anthology if you like, but it's a couple of different mini-series set in the world of Valenhai. That's the plan.
Yeah, so obviously we were doing like a crowdfunding campaign of sorts, I guess, via like PayPal on the Valenhai website. So I'm gradually getting back in touch with everyone who gave us money, because this isn't immediately going ahead. It didn't seem right to keep a hold of this money, and because it's not really the same project as what it was donated for as well. So I'm getting back in touch with people. Everyone in America so far, I've recommended that they let me hold on to the money a bit more, because the pound no longer exists. So they'd only be getting back a quarter of what they sent us. But yeah, if you've gave us money and you haven't heard from me yet, you could fire me a message, but I will be in touch. I'm not going to run off to Barbados or anything. But that's where we're at with Valenhai. And I suppose a moral of the story sometimes is that if you know something's maybe not going to work, it's never too late to pivot, I think is a trendy word for it nowadays. But there's no point in continuing with something if you don't feel it's got off to a good start. And, you know, it sounds like Robert and Steve have got a few new ideas, which it's going to be interesting to see how that goes. But in its current form, Valenhai, not dead, but, you know, it's going to be a different thing than it was, basically.
Yeah, it just turned out to be this huge project, which we could still have gone ahead with. We had all the scripts written. But we just realised that, going back over them, that there was so much detail in there that we weren't confident of conveying it properly to a listening audience. It's one thing to have Game of Thrones where you've got so much on screen at once, but it's a bit more, well, it's a bit different in audio, you know? And we didn't think we'd do it justice in its current form, and we got close to the recording dates and we thought, right, we need to be sensible about this, you know? We're not going to chase good energy after bad, if you like. So, yeah, we're going to make a couple of mini-series, hopefully, and it's been a huge learning curve. We've learned a lot from this. If anyone wants to talk to either me or Steve, I guess, well, let's say me, Steve might maybe won't want to talk to you, maybe he will, but if you ever want to talk about what it's like to get involved in a huge project which suddenly gives you perils on both sides, and I'll be happy to talk to you about it.
So onwards to the shows that we've been actually listening to at the moment. Remember I was talking about Mirth Defect, made by our pal Joe, who does interviews for this podcast sometimes. So I was waxing lyrical about that, wasn't I? It's a as-yet-unreleased series. I think it comes out at the end of the month, July 2016. So really looking forward to that. And only a few days later, Jacob Haiglock sent me his pilot version, his episode one. Him and his brother are making a series called Don Clark. It's about this detective. So, Robert, you've heard Mirth Defect and Don Clark. Now, you knew how excited I was about these things. Was I justified in that excitement?
100%, sir. I'm very happy to report that both Mirth Defect and Don Clark are absolutely worthy of your listening attention. I urge you to listen to them. I love them, and I'm really looking forward to hearing them and more episodes when they come out. I've been, you know, up and down with audio drama over the last 5 years. There's good, there's bad, there's more bad, there's good again. These two are stonkers. Honestly, get them listened to, as they say in Scotland.
Yeah, I think Jacob's shooting for maybe an October release for Don Clark. So I listened to it on the train to Glasgow. I was sitting there on a busy train, and you know when you know that you can't start laughing out loud, and I'm sitting grinning like a moron. It was just so funny. There's sometimes just like humour in audio drama that really strikes a chord with me. Two of the shows that are actually out there now that I've been listening to and really enjoyed and was laughing a lot to, The Winnebago Warrior by Audioblivious Productions and the Atheist Apocalypse podcast as well. They're two really funny shows. Winnebago Warrior, it sort of got this like King of the Hill vibe. Remember King of the Hill on TV? It's not totally similar to it, but there's just a similar vibe, and it's really, really funny. And I love what he does with the, I'm saying he, it's whoever wrote that particular script. They've got this thing with a narration where, like, they've got a narrator, he's in the story, so the narrator will describe something, and then the main character will repeat. So he'll say, like, John goes and does this, and then John, the main character, will repeat that. And it's like, it's just basically making fun of the narration because it doesn't have to be there.
Well, I'm sold just from the King of the Hill thing. It reminds me, actually, I was looking for something to watch on this free app I've got, right? And there's a lot of Star Trek stuff on there as well as different animations. And I saw this thing, it was Dang Old Koth. And I thought, Dang Old Koth, that sounds Klingon. I was like, ah, it's the only one. Dang Old King of the Hill, yeah.
Boomhauer.
Yeah.
And another show that I really need to get back to and check out is Roswell BC by our friend Boyd. Boyd just pledged $10 a month to this show on Patreon. And I think I'd listened to his episode one, and he's got a few more out there. So I really need to revisit that. So yeah, I'll put links to all the shows we've mentioned in the show notes, apart from the two that aren't actually out yet, although they might have websites. So you could maybe I'll put the social media details on and you can follow them, because I'm sure you'll be as keen for their release now as we are.
Absolutely. So that's about that for that, as they say.
Yeah, last thing on the podcast, a wee request for the listener. We want you to be on this podcast because we are not competent enough to do it on our own. This is a wee idea I came up with because I've not had as much time recently to do interviews with people, and I really like to get like different views on the show. I think that's one of the main strengths of the medium, is that we're all doing different things. We've got different techniques. We've learned different things, and it's great to bring that all together on the show rather than me and Robert just rabbiting on all the time.
Yeah, and creative ideas are all subjective, so they're going to naturally be differing from one person to another. So have your view heard by literally millions of people.
Yeah, exactly. We'll Photoshop some download stats. But what we're looking for you to do, if you wouldn't mind, is to send us some audio. So we've got three episodes in the pipeline at the moment. The deadline to get some audio to us is the 15th of August 2016. So the three episodes that we have planned, one is tips for making your listener laugh. The other is tips for scaring your listener. And our 100th episode is going to be one about advice that you'd give yourself before you started making audio drama, before you started writing it or producing it or whatever. That could be advice on writing, producing, just mindset stuff, anything at all. The more variety, the better. And ideally, these audio clips, and you could send in a clip for all three episodes or just one, it depends what you want to do. ideally between 1 and 5 minutes long. Just introduce yourself at the start of the clip, tell us about your show. Again, that's going to be a wee bit promotion for you. You'll get a link in the show notes and things like that as well. And either, you know, give us a tip for making your listener laugh, things you've maybe done in the past or things you've heard on other shows, or tips for scaring your listener, or of course the advice you'd give yourself before you started. And these three episodes will be basically made up of all these clips from different people. And already we've had some great stuff in, and I'm excited to put them together.
Yeah, cheeky wee montage should be pretty good, huh?
So please get clips into us, even if you've only been doing this for like a few weeks. If you feel like you're a total beginner, you still have something to add. You've still learned something, maybe not even by doing things yourself, but just by listening to other shows. So like I say, the deadline is the 15th of August. A clip between 1 and 5 minutes, ideally. Just send it to us as an MP3 to podcast@audiodramaproduction.com. That there is our email address.
Just one other thing I wanted to ask about, Matthew, if that's all right, if we've still got time on
the
tape.
Yeah, go for it.
What was that book you read again? The one you mentioned at the beginning?
The Power of Habit.
What do you think the follow-up book could be called?
I don't know. I dare say you've got a suggestion.
Back in the Habit. Because you're getting back in the habit, and that would be a good book title. So that's it, I guess. Get in touch the usual ways, podcast@audiodramaproduction.com. We're always hanging out in the Facebook group. You'll get us on Twitter and probably a myriad of other ways. You have the power. It's up to you to use it.
Yep. Goodbye. Audio clips in. I won't take no for an answer. Go and write that on your hand or something and make sure you remember to send us something over.
Even if you don't have a microphone available at this moment in time, use your mobile cellular telephone. Do it now. We love you. Speak to you soon.